All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Lecture 41 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Again, we've got a two-part agenda. We're going to do a little bit more of a discussion with regard to the writing assignment, and then we are going to continue on with the story of Jamestown and how it ultimately grew into a thriving colony of Virginia. And so that's kind of what we're up to for today. Let me share my desktop with you guys, and let's talk about this writing work that we've been doing on Anchor Facts. So just a reminder, your link here is back with the Lecture 40 resources. Actually, that's probably not an updated page, right? There's got to be the lecture links must be on. Yeah, there they are. The lecture links are on there from yesterday. So anyway, bringing up this document, your assignment was to give me a way to help this writer, who's made some good selections here of facts, definitely like the facts that the writer has chosen, but there's a problem. The essay doesn't have the kind of interconnection that we need in order to tell a story, right? It's got two separate facts. So I'm going to read this set of lines to you here to help you recapture the context, and then I want to see what you guys have to offer up as a means of integration. So the sentence is, after setting the context, which is really good with the topic sentence, historical events caused our world to become globalized and America-centric. Okay, good. Now our minds are properly positioned to receive the information. Now we go on. The Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia in 1776, forming a new nation that became a main world economic and military power. Okay. So that's addressing the America-centrism and globalization as well, all right? That's a good sentence all by itself. Then something jarring happens. Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492, which led to the French, Spanish, and British coming to America and colonizing it, which led to connections between nations. All right, so what happens here? What happens is we have the founders and an interesting statement about them. And then we have Christopher Columbus and an interesting statement about him too. But unfortunately, they don't go together. This is not a story, right? So how are we going to make it into a story? What are your ideas for generating connections on behalf of this writer here? Ben, what do you have to suggest? Sometimes Ben's there, sometimes he's not. Ashton, what do you have to suggest? Uh-oh, we got a few different people wimping out here. What's going on? I hope it's not three strikes, you're out. Piper, what about you?
Could you have Christopher Columbus go before the Founding Fathers?
Okay, that's a really interesting offering. So you're suggesting he should go first. Okay, Piper, but if you do that, if you just switch them, is that going to be enough?
Well, but then could you put, like, in the 300 years that followed, the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration that America became colonized and the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence?
All right, this is a really interesting offer. And now I got to take advantage of this offer here by starting up a new document. Ignore this for just a second. I'm going to start a new one. There we go. Okay, we'll come back to this in a minute. All right, so I like this offer so much that I want to copy and paste this out here and take this into a different document. Okay, and see what Piper's concept can turn into. Piper says, we can do two different things here. She says, take this and put it in front of this. Okay, I don't know why it's not properly set up like that. It must be some carriage returns in the text. Okay, there we go. So Piper's suggestion is first we take this, and then we build a a connection by saying... Sorry, what was the formulation again, Piper?
In the 300 years that followed, America became colonized and led to the founding fathers.
Okay, years that followed, America was colonized and, sorry?
Leading to the founding fathers.
Founding fathers signing. Okay, so now, okay, this is a really great, great idea. So Piper has come up with a really good solution to the problem. She said it's going to be easier to construct the connection if we reorder. So that's a great editing tool. Is you can sometimes when you're editing your writing work, when an option that you need to consider is. Is the order of my sentences correct? And so it can be useful to just flip them and then say to yourself, oh, and then this makes it easier for me to connect. So I really like this offering. And so now I feel that it's as far as this goes, it needs work though, right? It's still a little rushed. So I like what you did, Piper, with your idea of, okay, you're talking about colonization because that's the bridge. Right? I mean, basically, in our story, just conceptually, we have discovery, we have colonization, and we have independence. So as far as kind of main themes, right, this is where the story is going. So I like that you've done that, basically, in the way that you've presented the facts. You said, we're going to go in this order, the order that actually happened in history. But it's a little bit rushed. So we're going to have to take this, turn it into a sentence. And then, so the way that I would do that, in the 300 years that follow, America was colonized by Europeans, including the English. Later, the American English colonists, known as the Founding Fathers, signed the Declaration of Independence, forming a new nation. There we go. So this needs more editing, right? But I feel like we don't want to rush it. So I find that in quite a bit of the writing, actually, this is a really useful point that Piper's helping me to make, which is I feel like you guys are rushed sometimes to get through from one spot to the other. Colonization deserves a sentence, you know, that it deserves kind of, we need a breath here. And so we don't want to rush right through to independence. All right, so this is a really fine reworking. Excellent. So a good offer. Does anybody have, well, who else is going to give us an offer? Keen, did you have a different concept?
I have the same concept. I would add, if I were going to completely rewrite this, it might work. It might, you know, the 509 might benefit from being even before the Founding Fathers and Columbus. Just, you know, that would make the whole thing probably...
Okay.
It's the same as me.
Yeah, so that's the more ambitious kind of editing is to suggest, well, let's go all the way back to our first event, carry that through, fall of Rome. We need a date, don't we? There's still a missing date for the fall of Rome. But then once we get that in there, we just keep going in order. That's a good one. So that's good. But it doesn't have to be done that way. Can anybody think of a way to work this so that the order stays the same? And it's still possible. Can we keep the order the same? Alexander?
You can put like a previously word or something like that.
Okay, right. We need that. So that what you're talking about there is some kind of transition word, right? Just some kind of transition. It doesn't necessarily have to be chronological. But yeah, so the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence. So forming a new nation that became the main world economic and military power. All right, so here's going to be my suggestion. I'm going to say off the top of my head here. This development, which has so profoundly shaped the world we live in, was rooted in the earlier discovery of America by Christopher Columbus in 1492. Okay, so that kind of, there's an extensive transition that, where I said a couple other things. So, you know, you got a lot of different ways to do it. And I'm sensing kind of a theme here in our discussion, which is don't rush it. Don't rush it. Be comfortable. Storytelling is an art, and it is sometimes completely valuable and valid to go quickly through something, and not to have, you know, not to be too wordy in your descriptions. But on the other hand, when you're trying to sweep through history like this, and it's quite a whirlwind tour, one of the things that's going to be useful for your reader's benefit is for you to provide a kind of smooth ride through these centuries and millennia of information, right? So we can't be leaping from fact to fact. We want to smooth things over. So that's, I think, going to be my message to you today is, be comfortable providing the transition that you need to provide. Don't worry. Length is not the issue. Quantity is not the issue. It's quality. So that's what we're going to do here. So if you're writing this narrative, you've got a few things to choose from here. It's been suggested that you should start way back at the beginning and go in chronological order. You don't have to, though. It might make it easier for you to write out the transitions and to weave these facts together. But, you know, because you have successfully, this writer here has successfully done some integration, right? For instance, this is kind of interesting because after the Europeans destroyed Rome, well, okay, again, what I would say about this sentence is it's rushed. It's rushed because how long does it take for the Europeans to settle, to even discover America after the fall of Rome? Round number. Alexander?
1,000 years.
1,000 years, exactly. So you can't do this. I'm sorry. You cannot skip through that 1,000 years like this as if they didn't happen. Right? So you're gonna, it's a great identification that you've made, but you have to calmly proceed through to this point that you're trying to make, which is a good one. So again, you don't have to go in any particular order. These narrations can go in just about any order. Whatever the flow is for you and the ideas, go with it. But don't give short shrift to 1,000 years here or there and to the, you know, the essential things that are happening. Okay. So here what we need is when European barbarians destroyed the Roman Empire, it allowed them to form their own new civilization. Period. After 1,000 year dark age, as these primitive people formed this civilization, they were finally ready to strike out into the world on an age of discovery. Period. Yeah, I just inserted two whole sentences and I'm still not quite ready to say what you want to say. So, don't worry about it. Don't rush it. Okay, that's the final statement of my theme for today. Okay, very productive. I really like what you guys had to say today. Thank you, Piper, especially, and Keen and Alexander for your insights here. Because the writer of this paragraph and all of you are benefiting from that advice, each and every one of your paragraphs is going to be superior. So, great. Thank you. Okay, let's go back to our theme for today, which is the success of Virginia. And just a reminder of the predicament that the colonists originally found themselves in. Right, they had been encouraged by the king to head off to this place. He granted these two competing charters, one to the London Company, one to the Plymouth Company, and they're supposed to go there and make this happen. Oh my gosh. Well, easier said than done. Here's kind of an interesting thought connected to the Renaissance. And you, I'm kind of asking this. I just gave you a hint by stating it that way. But here's the question. When was the last time in history anybody had conducted any colonization? And that is something else to think about. When was the last time in history anybody had done any colonization? I was hoping you would seize on my hint and make an educated guess. The Europeans hadn't done it. Keen?
Okay, I was trying to think for a specific date, but so the ancient Greeks and Romans is what you're looking for.
There you go, exactly. That was my hint of the Renaissance, right? It was, the Greeks and Romans were the last people that had conducted colonization. The Athenians, for instance, and the Greeks, more widely, had spread out from Greece all the way up into the Black Sea, around in the entire Mediterranean region. They had colonies in the south of France, they had colonies in different parts of the Mediterranean and the Black Sea. So the Greeks were ancient colonizers. Now, of course, they were had their world swallowed up by the Romans, who were imperialists. But there was an element of colonization to the Roman imperial approach as well. For instance, the Romans colonized Britain. So it was one of the places that they went to and founded cities. I mean, London was a Roman city. Londinum. So it was a colony. I mean, there were a lot of native peoples there, but basically they were being conquered by these imperialists who were also colonists. So the Romans were kind of solved this problem. The Athenians had solved this problem. But knowledge of how to conduct colonization as a kind of progressive feature of civilization had been lost. The Europeans could barely manage their own lives in the 1,000 years in between the fall of Rome. I mean, they had migrated, but what we're talking about there in the migrations of the tribes is every single person moving. Quite a different proposition. And plundering along the way, fighting others, taking what they have and trying to find a place that's easier to live, and fighting wars against all your neighbors. Different proposition than colonization. So it's no wonder that it was so hard for the English to succeed at this task. They didn't know how. There was no Greco-Roman manual for colonization that they could read, unfortunately, too. So, how many barrels of fish you got to bring in, and this and that, and so on and so forth. There just wasn't. So you had to learn how, and unfortunately, the cost of learning was human life. I mean, people died in order to solve these problems, right? We had a 16% death rate on the voyage across, and we had a 16% survival rate once you arrived. Oh my gosh. I mean, right? That's what we saw the other day, was this unbelievable statistic of the first 500 colonists, only 60 of them were left after the first 2 years. So how are we going to go from this, which is, this is not sustainable, right? This is not going to be, this is not a problem that's been solved yet. This is just a problem that keeps on, it's just keeps on happening, and it's not getting any better. So we're going to have to make two transitions here, or the colonists of the era, we're going to have to make two transitions. One is, they're going to have to just learn how to survive. The other is, after that, they're going to have to do even better. They're going to have to thrive. So how on earth did they do that? So, well, first of all, John Smith. We talked about John Smith already. Where's my buddy John Smith? Oh, he's back here. Don't look at those guys. He's back here getting off the boat. And so he's one of these guys. I guess he's the one in front. So John Smith has been saved by Pocahontas. He returns to the colony, which already by this point is starting to fall apart. So he takes over, and he institutes a very simple rule. He that does not work shall not eat. So he imposes this rule on the colonists. Nobody's allowed to look for gold anymore. No more, no more kidding yourselves here. This is a survival problem. And if we don't grow food, we don't succeed in making a settlement, we are dead. So he institutes this rule. The colony still is barely in a survival mode. So how are we going to get from a survival mode to actual progress, to a situation where this colony could stand on its own two feet? It could be independent. Well, they were going to have to do something. They were going to have to actually, here's the thing. They were going to actually have to be a colony. I mean, the theory was pretty good. But putting the theory into practice, that was the challenge, right? The theory said a colony is a place where you plant citizens of your country. Citizens, the wrong word. Subjects of the king back then. Where you plant Englishmen. And, well, they turn that place into a little part of England. Now, especially, there's something that we expect them to do. If we're going to call that place that they're living a part of England, what do they have to do to earn that designation rather than just a big hole in the ground that's swallowing up all of our resources? What do they have to do? Keen?
Well, they're going to have to become of use to England. England will have to see them as valuable.
Yeah, there you go. Of use, right? They're going to have to produce something that the theory of colonization recognizes as a genuine purpose for a colony. Right? Now they're going to have to make something that that people in England want. I forgot to prepare my cute. Just a second here. I don't want my screen to have the wrong things on it, so I'm just going to deny you my desktop for a second while I prepare this funny looking thing. Oh yeah, this is funny. Maybe I could get a bigger version of it. Where's the bigger version of it? Here we go. Oh, that's good. Oh my gosh. I found a big one. I didn't get this till just now. View image. All right, here we go. You guys will like this. So what were they going to be able to do in Virginia to make themselves of use? Well, nowadays we look back on this and we kind of shake our heads in wonderment and with a certain amount of disdain based on the culture that we live in. But here's some kind of illustration or advertisement poster of some sort from the 1600s, which is, isn't it cool to smoke? And so, yes, it was cool at the time. And so what had happened? Well, the Europeans following Columbus, I mean, Columbus had seen this practice in the Americas when he first arrived in 1492. The natives smoked. They grew this plant, tobacco, and they put it in pipes and smoked it. And apparently the outcome is rather pleasant in strange, intoxicating ways. And so, he brought this stuff back to Europe. And before you know it, everybody in Europe is addicted to smoking. No, just kidding. Exaggerated, right? But basically, it was something that was exotic. And of course, as a symbol of the new world and as a symbol of globalization. It was cool, right? Smoking was embracing this trend of all of these exotic values that are coming from the Americas. And so it did become kind of a craze in populations that had a little bit of extra money to spend. People started smoking. And so it's funny though, because even back then, I'm just going to download this. I'm going to save this for myself because I really like it. Anyway, so, but going back here, the reason I got this image off the web and different things about smoking, but King James, it's interesting. We sometimes think of ourselves in modern times as being these more knowledgeable, intelligent folks here, but this is pretty cool. This is King James of England wrote this text. It was called A Counterblast to Tobacco. And so he wrote an essay talking about how disgusting smoking is and how he doesn't want Englishmen to smoke. So that was kind of funny. So back then, the anti-smoking propaganda was already working hard, even though they didn't even understand that smoking can be bad for your health. But actually did have a sense, because it's not that hard to tell. If you try smoking, you'll know, your lungs will tell you it's not good for you. So anyway, but anyway, didn't stop people from wanting to smoke. And the problem, of course, was that the tobacco was coming to England from Spain. And we know this is a fundamentally unacceptable proposition to the mindset of the Europeans, because you're bleeding your country of gold and silver in order to buy a product from other people. So the success of the Virginia colony came when a man named John Rolfe, I can chat you his name in the chat box, John Rolfe. When a man named John Rolfe learned how to grow the kind of Caribbean strains of tobacco in Virginia. The natives in Virginia had their own kind of tobacco, but people in Europe didn't like the taste of it. So John Rolfe found a way to grow or hybridize, I don't know the details of the types of tobacco and how you grow them. It's too detailed for me. But he figured out how to grow them in Virginia. And thus, Virginia was now going to be a colony that would produce a value that the people in England wanted. And more importantly than that, a value that they wanted, which previously they had to buy from Spain. And therefore, the colony was going to perform that most basic function of a colony, as explained by Richard Hakluyt. Substitution of trade in favor of the home country. Keep the money in England. So tobacco is grown, and John Rolfe is a really fascinating character because he eventually marries Pocahontas. Here's a painting of the marriage of John Rolfe and Pocahontas. The story is kind of a fascinating one, and I don't know how much we really know about it, but it certainly is a story that captures the imagination, which I think it's kind of a romanticized story, because here we have this successful colonist, we have the daughter of Powhatan, we have, you know, this kind of marriage that everybody wishes would somehow have solved the problem of the relationship between the English and the Powhatans, because in tribal life, no better way to kind of get two different peoples who otherwise would not be able to get along, no better way to solve that problem than to get the peoples to intermarry. And thus, they become one. tribal way, right? And Pocahontas actually did have a child, but she herself died when she went on a trip back to England and got sick. So, sadly, this was not going to be one of the things that was really difficult about the contact between peoples from different parts of the world was that before globalization, every part of the world had its own strange mix of viruses and bacteria and all those things that make us sick, basically. Every part of the world had its own, I'm not sure if I'm using the right word here, but I think it is the right word, its own biome, right? Meaning a kind of little cocoon of species and of animals and plants and people living side by side, getting sick and building up immunities to different diseases and so on. And so when globalization began, a lot of diseases from one part of the world hitched a ride on the boats and went to other parts of the world and made people really sick and killed a lot of people, in fact. And so that's a sad part of the story of Pocahontas, was that, like a lot of natives, she would not have the immunity to European diseases or strains of the flu or colds or whatever. And so they were very susceptible to those things and died off because of them. So anyway, these are all kind of details of the story, really, that are interesting and sometimes pretty compelling, because you have these people getting married, which is pretty neat. But in essence, what was going to lead to the success of the colony was tobacco. And so because the colonists had to produce something that the people in England were willing to buy. But the problem still, to get this done, tobacco is not easy to grow. To get this done, people had to be planted in Virginia and work very hard to actually make it. And we have already seen that the math here was very difficult. It was not favorable. The math of colonization, the math of survival was not favorable. So there had to be, basically, if the cost or if the risk was very high, what had to offset that? What's the nature of the calculation in life? What do we call that? Risk, and what's the flip side of it? Alexander?
Reward.
Risk-reward calculation, exactly. So if the risk was so high, there had to be a commensurate reward. So a system was devised, an ingenious system, was devised to bring over colonists. And it involved two components. So, and this is what this little whiteboard is about here. The two components, the two success factors of the colonization system of Virginia. The most fundamental one is actually the second one. So I think I'm going to start there. Maybe I'm going to do like Piper was saying about the paragraph. I'm going to switch the order of these here. I think the most fundamental component of the success of Virginia was the head right system. And it involves, if you look at this word, it's a strange compound word, right? Head right. And that's about all you need in order to figure out what it means. It means a right for a head. Not what Alexander's saying. What it means is, as long as you've got a head, you've got a right. So, no, what do I mean for a joke? What it meant was, the incentive system here that the king was going to allow was that every person that succeeded in making the trip across to Virginia would obtain a head right. And that head right amounted to
50 acres of land. The deed to 50 acres of land. That was the headright. Now, so, you know, this is the reward, right? This is the incentive to go. And it's amazing to think about it because in Europe, there was no chance for any peasant, for any regular person, let's put it that way, to get land. It was taken. All the land belonged to the king. It was divided up among the lords and small property owners and farmers and stuff. And peasants had no chance ever in their life to get 50 acres of land. So the incentive system was really powerful in that sense because this was going to totally transform your possibilities in life. If you could go to America and survive it and work hard, you would get your 50 acres. Now, there was a challenge involved here because not everybody could afford the passage. And so in order to get more people to come across, there had to be not just an incentive for colonists, but an incentive for colonizers. And so a system accompanying the headright system was put into place called indentured servitude. And what this means, essentially, you see servitude as a word there. What this means is that if you didn't have the ability to pay for your passage to America yourself, you had to enter into a contract with somebody else to pay your ticket. And in exchange, when you arrived in America, you would have to work their land for 5 to 7 years, depending on the terms of the contract. But that was about the norm. So your passage was taken care of, and you were fed, and you were lodged, but you had to work for the person who paid your passage. You had to work for them for 5 to 7 years. That was your term of indentured servitude. So you could pay off, basically, your passage across America, across the Atlantic, pardon me. And then, once you had completed your term of indentured servitude, then you obtained your headright. You got your 50 acres. Which just means that once you had worked for somebody else for 5 to 7 years, you got to work for yourself for the rest of your life. So, not an easy proposition by any means, but what's great about this, what I think is actually quite profound about this, was if you were willing to work, you weren't just going to eat, you were just going to live. There was an opportunity here, which quite a number of people succeeded in taking advantage of. There was an opportunity to thrive, to make a life for yourself that you couldn't imagine ever making in Europe. There was no opportunity to rise up like this in Europe. So here we have the beginning of really that great phrase, the land of opportunity. America's always been the land of opportunity. And I think it starts right here. It starts with, if you're willing to take this risk, the reward potentially for you and for your descendants will be enormous. You will get to live a completely different life than anybody back in Europe can imagine. So yeah, we've got this combined kind of system, and it proved to be very effective. Every colonizer who brought somebody else across got a headright for that person. And then the person themselves got a headright. So, you know, if you are investing in bringing colonists over, you are accumulating land really quickly. On the other hand, if you happen to be one of these penniless people who's heading across the Atlantic, there's an opportunity for you to grow rich too. And my favorite story about this kind of land of opportunity story has to do with a man named John Washington. So I suppose you can probably guess why he's my favorite example of what I'm going to say here. John Washington is the great-grandfather of George Washington. He arrived in Virginia in 1657 as the mate of a ship. So he was, you know, remember that guy in the painting that doesn't even have any shoes and he works on a boat? I mean, he was young still. He was still what we would call a boy. He was a mate on a ship, and he decided to stay and claim his headright. And within 11 years, John Washington had over 5,000 acres of land in Virginia. So if you knew what you were doing, if you were willing to put in the effort, well, you're going to have potentially enormous rewards. I mean, a 5,000 acre estate. Yeah, it's not Europe. It's still mostly wilderness. And it's really hard, but keep going. Generation after generation, you're going to be building something real. And there are some quite considerable estates still in Virginia, you know, like this as a result. And by the time George Washington comes along, generations later, his family is highly successful. He's a member of the colonial aristocracy in Virginia. So cool, we're getting there, right? We're finally getting there. Like I said, we have this bridge from discovery to colonization to independence. John Washington is about just the best personal example of that. He's going to be the great-grandfather of George Washington, who's probably the single most responsible person for independence. So we're getting there. We're starting to get to America. We're getting colonies that are thriving. And, well, of course, we got more of them to come, because by the time we get to independence, we don't just have Virginia. We've got 13 colonies, so we're going to have to start to fill in the story here. How do we get there? After our Virginia colony, we've got these characters. Does anybody recognize them? Also very famous contributors in the story of colonization. King?
Puritans.
The Puritans, yes, aka the Pilgrims, right, in American history. And then after them and others, we'll see, you know, more and more of them. Here's the colonists of Maryland posing for a painting putting up their, founding their colony, and so on. So we're gonna see a bunch of different English colonies rising up to eventually to number 13 on the East Coast by the time of independence. And they're going to be very different people. And it's very interesting how they're going to have to get along. But on top of that, there's going to be the French. They're going to be founding New France. And so that's going to create a whole set of challenges as well. Because France and England, as we know, don't get along, and therefore, how are they going to resolve their competing colonial claims? I'm sure you can predict how. And then finally, when we get to the end of that chapter of colonial wars, we get to independence. All right, so next week we follow the story of colonization. We'll get to more colonies. We'll get to the French. We'll get to their conflicts. And that will put us in a position when we come back in the new year to get ready for independence. All right, folks, that's it for today. Talk to you tomorrow in History Through Art. Bye for now.